The function of leadership is to produce more leaders, not more followers. Leaders of men.
Well, hey, Bastiat, what an absolute pleasure, my brother. Thank you for being here.
Yeah, it's an honor to be here with you, Nick. Grateful that we are able to align, and good to see your face.
Yeah, you too, man. Very much looking forward to it. Start off, what does masculinity mean to you?
Masculinity to me is the expression of the creative principle of life, of the divine. If the feminine being the receptive, wet, wild, chaotic, the masculine being order and trust, creation, direction, leadership, structure. The masculine is the force. We all have it within us, whether we're a man or a woman, however we identify. So yeah, we are an expression of masculinity, you and I, and anyone in male bodies with male genitalia. And I guess that's a greater conversation regarding gender identification and all that, but I do believe that there is a natural order that we are a part of and we are an expression of and within masculinity. So
if you had a 12-year-old son, or when your son becomes 12, what is the most significant thing he needs to know?
The ways of being a man, the ways of stepping into the world and his responsibility being in a male body. That speaks to the right time of rite of passage. You know, he's going into puberty now, and he's his sexual expression is coming online. And so it's time at that time. It's the transition period from boyhood to manhood. It's the beginning. And so grateful that we are we are bringing back these ways, these rites of passages, these initiations that have been lost to modern cultures. And for me, and I have two sons, you know, so Kyra's three and Nature was just born. He's a couple months old, but even though we're quite a bit away from that age of puberty and the transition from boyhood to manhood, it feels really good knowing what we're creating within Sacred Sons is kind of a reclamation and a return to that natural. That, you know, because traditionally boys are generally initiated by the uncles and the village, right? And so Sacred Sons is really like a brotherhood that I'm like, okay, like my sons are taken care of. They can learn the ways, not just from me, which they will, of course. And it's important for boys to see many different reflections of what a man looks like so that they can be like, oh, like dad doesn't have that or doesn't do that, but uncle does. Or like, I like the way that uncle expresses his creativity in this way, because I didn't see that modeled with dad, you know? So seeing a plethora, a spectrum of masculinity, of eldership, of embodiment is important. And that's such a crucial time for boys to really see the pathway forward, you know, feeling the energy of puberty and their sexual budding coming to fruition and coming online. So really a sensitive time and an important time that they have strong support and strong direction so that they don't just like, you know, because it's a time of rebellion also. It's a time of testing. It's a time of becoming their own, you know. When I was 12 years old, at around that age, at that point, I had already lost trust in the authority figures. I already had lost trust in my father, and there was no one in my life that I could look to and be like, wow, I really look up to them. You know, there's no one directly in my life that I could consider a mentor or an elder or a guide. And so, so important that our boys have men to look up to, have elders to look up to. And so, yeah, it's a time of rite of passage. It's a time of initiation from boyhood into manhood.
It's pretty clear these days that the rite of passage is something that is just completely gone in modern society.
Yeah.
What is an example that you can give of a modern day rite of passage?
Well, we have a wilderness program. So it's an opportunity for boys to be guided by men into a ceremonial experience, entryway into nature with awareness to our connection, the boys' connection to nature, that we, you know, bringing in the awareness that we are completely dependent upon nature, that we don't exist apart from nature, you know, returning to this ancient way of being that tribes from around the world and villages around the world are for the most part still connected to. There's still this connection and awareness in many intact tribes. You know, they're still living in this way with that awareness. So, you know, being initiated into the greater community of life, into the greater awareness of ourselves as just being a small part of that tapestry of life, that we are not the end all be all of creation, you know, that yes, you're important, you're valuable, you're a priceless being, and you're just part, you're just one small part of all of it. And so what is your responsibility now with this awareness, with this growing awareness? How can you walk your path in a good way? How can you honor the life that's moving and flowing through you with awareness? You know, that you are connected to everything, you know, so kind of being initiated into the greater awareness of themselves as being part of nature, themselves as being part of the human community, the human family. And with, you know, with awareness, if it's through Sacred Sons, with their connection to the Sacred Sons brotherhood and community, you know, and different principles that we abide by and live in, integrity, responsibility to nature, showing up as a safe and protective force for the good of women and children. And so, you know, there's of course stages and waves depending on the age. We wouldn't want to impress and overwhelm, you know, an 11 or 12 year old boy, you know, but it's very different if they're at 15, you know, or 18 even, because there's some hurdles and there's some challenges and blocks for access, you know, for men to even come into this, even as, you know, I've heard it said that the adolescence has extended to like 28 or somewhere around that range, where, you know, adulthood has moved farther back, you know, and universities being kind of like a holding ground and another wave of like parenting. You know, and so people look at their alma maters, you know, with like this like parental fondness, like, oh yeah, my alma mater, kind of an extension of our adolescent stage. So, you know, as we make this more readily available, as we make rites of passage and bring them back into popular awareness, and really reconnect our collective masculinity with the awareness that rites of passage and all of us, really all of humanity, that rites of passage are important, you know, because women have, you know, their menstruation, they get their periods, you know, as a clear indicator that they're being initiated into life. They can have children now. I mean, you know, for all intents and purposes, that's like the initiation of that sexual maturity, growing to be able to bear children. It's more subtle for men, and which is why I think the clear ceremonial rite of passage is important for boys, so that we can feel and experience it beyond just, you know, growing hair. So yeah, man, it's coming back, and we're here for that.
I met this very dear brother in Peru a few years ago, and he was saying, he lives in Montana, and he was saying that at the age of 11, might have been 12, I think it was at 11, his parents sent him up to a cabin in the mountains in the middle of the winter, and he had to live by himself for 2 months.
Wow.
At the time, I was like, whoa, that is super intense. But now with all the work I've been doing and where I'm at in the moment, like actually that is what used to happen. It's like now you're ready for manhood. Now you have to go off and connect with nature and just really tear yourself away from your mother's breast and become your own man.
And yeah, that's beautiful. What a gift. What a gift. Yeah, I had a little bit of a different experience with that was when my parents separated clearly. They got in a huge fight before I was going into middle school. My dad disappeared from my life, actually. And that was sort of an initiation with that traumatic experience, kind of like that. Now I have to be a man because my dad's gone. It was definitely not the ideal circumstance. And at the same time, everything happens for a reason. And it was a challenging initiation, and I carried that pain for a long time. But I look back on it now in retrospect, and I was like, oh, that was really the end of my childhood. That was the end of the belief I held that one day my parents would get back together. The end of my childhood hope that we're going to be like a healthy whole family. I was holding on to that, you know, even though my parents were separated since I was five, my dad and mom would, you know, they'd still come back together and my dad would, you know, be there during the summer times. And so I held on to that childish hope that, you know, one day my parents are going to get back together and everything's going to be okay again. And so in their, you know, volatile separation and the, you know, my mom called the police, it was really intense. It was really the end of that childhood hope and longing and the beginning of kind of a reckoning with the harsh reality. Dad's gone. My mom's a single mom. I have two sisters. I'm the only guy here. And so I was like really subsumed into that role. And so, you know, it's not initiation looks in all different ways now in our cultures, you know, and oftentimes it's through pain and trauma, and it's not in a ritualized ceremonial context, you know? And so there's some extra pain and suffering that goes into that. And at the same time, pain quickens consciousness. Suffering brings about growth and change. And so it's all necessary. And I look forward to the day when rites of passage that are held in ceremony, that community, this growing wave of community, right? Building, fostering community and brotherhood. I look forward to the day when that awareness is just in popular culture. Like, oh, like, where are you being initiated? Oh, what was your initiation like? You know, that it's just a normal topic of conversation. So I'm holding that vision.
Beautiful, man. What is your most profound pain in this moment?
I guess it's just a couple things, I guess. On a personal level, it's the pain of witnessing and holding space for my mother's decline. That's been going on for a few years now, and it's been really volatile and traumatic for my family, especially, you know, she started living with us 6 months after my first son, Kyra, was born. And so we had this first 6 months of bliss and just joy and like, oh my God, we're new parents. That was the beginning of Sacred Sons and beginning of my wife's work with Sacred Sister Circle. And so it was really this time of just like newness and the blessing and the bliss of that. And my mom coming in really being traumatized and she was neglected by my sister and really in poor health, mentally, emotionally, physically. It put a weight on her family, and you know, so she's early onset dementia, and so it's a great burden. It's a great burden to be able to have her be in my family, in my immediate family, in my home, to live with us, and to not to feel like I'm kind of helpless in it. I mean, there's things I can do. And at the same time, the reality that I'm left with is my mother's declining. She's losing herself mentally to a degenerative disease. And I get to hold space for it and learn to love her despite the energy that it takes and despite the heaviness that she has and carries with her from cross-generational trauma that she's never addressed, never been able to address. And so it might come out sideways, or she's in a mood and suddenly the whole house is energy. It's like, you know, takes up space. And there's a part of me that wants to just push her away. It doesn't want that as a part of my reality. It's a part of me that just wishes I could just be in the bliss and the joy and the jovial energy of having two little ones running around, or one little one running around and another one growing. It just wants to be attuned to that without having to hold this heaviness, this weight of death, of impending death, of decline. And so, yeah, I kind of have a guard up around my mother and have a tendency to kind of keep her at arm's length and just kind of, you know, have contact with her and relationship with her to be more on a surface level. You know, I'll give her a hug, I'll say nice things. And at the same time, if I'm there for too long, she can trigger me. She can trigger the fuck out of me. And it's hard. It's just hard. It's hard to hold it. And so, yeah, there's a lot of grief with that. And that's the personal. And beyond that, it's just like the collective, you know, this collective soul retrieval that we're moving through, this collective dark night of the soul, collective initiation, whatever you want to call what's happening in our collective with the encroaching tyranny and really expression of this unconscious masculine seeking to control, ferry us into like this really narrow path of like what's acceptable, what we can and can't do with our own bodies. So that brings up grief at times. It brings up anger at times. But for the most part, I've come to accept like, hey, this is what we're here to meet. We are more than fully equipped to do so. And it's a matter of personal choice. You know, we rise together, but not everybody's going to make it. That's what we say in Sacred Sons. We rise together, but it's a continual choice of whether we want to rise or whether we want to regress, of whether we want to take responsibility for our life, you know, for our families, for our collective, for our communities, or whether we want to give away our power and hope that government or other institutions are going to take care of us or have our best interests at heart. And, you know, you and I know, and I think many other leaders in this collective movement know that whenever we give away our power or expect some other outer force to save us or take care of us, to really disavow our own responsibility, there are consequences, usually painful consequences for doing so. And if we just look at history, we can see many cases and examples of when people did that and shit went really south really quick. So it's hard. It's hard to hold it all on a personal level and a collective level, but that's what we're tasked to do. That's what I'm tasked to do in this time. And so grateful, you know, to be in the work, grateful to have spaces where I can go in myself to feel it, to grieve it. Because without these spaces, it'd be coming out sideways. I'd be, you know, seeking addiction or whatever it might be to soothe myself. And so it's the work that allows me to stay present to my responsibility as a father, as a husband, as a brother, as a son. I need this work. Yeah.
Man, I just want to firstly thank you for going as deep as you did. I could feel the pain in your voice as you were speaking. Yeah. So thank you.
Thank you for your witness. Thank you for the safety you carry in your body that allows me to feel that.
And just that, I feel the frustration of this situation we're in and these people so willingly giving away their freedom in the hope that somebody else will take care of everything for them. And I'm just whenever I fall into this trap of having these conversations and out of my energy going in that direction, I'm just reminded that, you know, we chose to be here at this time for this exact purpose.
Yeah.
That this is the time when we are most, the work we are doing is most needed. And to just stay the course, knowing that everything is exactly perfect the way it is in this moment.
It is. It is. It's the perfect confluence of our free will, of divine universal law, and the interplay of all of it together, right? Our collective karma coming back. So it is. This is the highest and most perfect expression. And it's just up to us to really exercise our free will fully, to honor our gifts fully, so that we can come into greater and greater alignment and greater perfection. So, yeah, man, good to be a part of that with you right now, brother. This is it.
What is your deepest desire?
What's my deepest desire? It's the continue unfolding of the new earth, of what we have seen in our visions and felt in our deepest healing and ceremony and lovemaking. It's the vision that's coming to life, you know, within communities and movements and hearts around the world, you know, this template of like the new earth of the golden age and what that really feels and looks like. And, you know, there's been times within Sacred Sons and even other communities that I've been in that I'm like looking around and just seeing love in the eyes of those around me, seeing, feeling peace and connection and trust and a sense of like, here we are again. And this is a beautiful unfolding that we get to take part in, this divine unfoldment, this divine expression that we all get to take part in, this celebration of life and being. And so my greatest desire, it goes back to that vision that I've been shown and that many others have received of returning to greater balance with nature, of returning to greater connection in community, of relearning what it really is to be human and spirit, to really hold both in a good way, right? To walk in a grounded way and interact and relate in a healthy, aligned way with integrity. And at the same time, not being divorced and separate from the sacred and nature and the life pulse of the divine that courses and moves through us and moves us. So really my greatest desire is to see that as far as and as much as it can go in my lifetime. And I feel like there's going to be a transition period that we're going to be moving through for a time. If we just like really recognize where most people are at and where the world is at, I'm under no illusion that it's going to take some time, you know, especially from the human perspective, it's going to take some time, but from the divine perspective, it's going to happen in the blink of an eye, you know, and this earth is going to be reclaimed. So my greatest desire and wish is for the fulfillment of the divine plan, that the earth become a space, a safe space where we can really jump off and realize the deepest meaning of life and the greatest expression of divine right here in form. Yeah, right here on earth.
As you were speaking, it reminded me of something that I'd read. And I actually think it was a post that you had done about we are in the process of birthing the vision that we've all had in our dreams and in our desires. And it's exactly it, man. The birthing process is not easy and it's not comfortable. Mm-hmm. And we are in this moment where that new earth is coming and is being birthed. And we're like deep in the labor pains, if we've even got to the depth of it yet.
Yeah, so we're still in it. We're still in it, man. We have a ways to go, realistically speaking. And it is seated in our hearts and minds, you know, for the cultural innovators and the people on the forefront of consciousness. And there's many of us who are remembering. So it is an exciting time to be alive.
What is an uncomfortable truth about you?
Yeah. I guess the most uncomfortable truth is that I'm learning to be a good father. I'm still learning to be a good father. I'm still working through traumas and ways I've been shut down in boyhood. I'm like literally working through it with my children. You know, I wish I could. I've done so much work, and I was like, oh yeah, I'm so ready to be a father. And the reality of it is, I'm learning every day. I'm continually humbled. And I recognize where I want to be and where I am. And it's humbling, and it's hard to just accept, like, hey, this is the best I can do right now. This is the best I can give, the most I can give. And that's okay. And like, this is also their karma, right? That in the divine plan of things, there are no accidents, and they're here in my care for a reason. You know, and so it's hard because I have a high standard of what I believe we are responsible for as fathers, as men. And I see where I fall short of that. I feel when I'm lacking patience, or I'm irritated, or I just want to just, you know, control, you know, get my son to do what I believe he should do. Why is it so hard to just take a bath? It's not so bad. It doesn't have to be this bad. It's like in the simplest of things. And I'm real. I get tested on a daily basis of how much can I really hold, and how grounded can I be without losing my emotional center? You know, how compassionate can I be when they're really crying and going through it? Can I just be with them in their pain every day? And I can, and it's hard, and I'm not always able to meet it fully. I'm not there. I'm learning as I go. And, you know, I gotta give myself credit for what I do well, and that I am still here and showing up and keeping an open heart, because it can get challenging, especially when both of them are popping off, you know, both of them are going, they're both in it. And I'm just like, oh my God, this is madness. This is chaos. And I feel helpless. It makes me feel helpless at times that I can't just, you know, shift the energy. You know, distraction is helpful. Being able to shift their focus and direct their attention elsewhere, it's helpful. But man, there's times where I just feel helpless. Just feel helpless.
When was the last time you were out of integrity?
Well, I mean, probably earlier with us arranging our time and me saying, you know, yeah. And not, I guess just not planning well enough. And, you know, that's a small expression of it, but it's real, you know, just speaking like, hey, yeah, I'm going to be there at this time. And then not being able to fully meet that and be timely. You know, that's a good example of it, because it, you know, these small, things, they build up, you know, they're patterns. You know, it's like, this is a clear reflection for me. It's like, I need to tighten up. Mm-hmm. And I've been doing that since coming back from Convergence, because that was a clear realignment for me. Our the theme for Convergence was realign. And so we were out in the desert with 150 men, you know, facilitators and participants doing this deep work, and realign is the theme. And I was speaking to our facilitator container, about 40 men or so. I was saying, this isn't just for the men that are coming in. This is for us as well. You know, what are we here to realign in? How are we here to call each other forward as leaders, as facilitators of this work? You know, the work continues on. And this is a piece for me that I'm continually having to look at and work on, you know, of just being true to my word, especially in regards to timing. You know, for some reason, I mean, there's probably multiple reasons to this. Part of it being raised in a single mother family in a lot of chaos, and just just being always late, my mom taking us late to school, being late to different things, all like just like as a, just like my whole youth, it was just, we were late to everything, you know, because she was a single mother raising three kids and having to be there and drop this kid and just like doing everything literally by herself. And so this way of projecting forward, like, yeah, I'm going to do this. I'm going to be there, like over promising, over committing. You know, having unrealistic expectations. This is something that I'm really having to realign and refine in myself. And so you've got to witness it, experience it. I was like, yeah, I'll be able to do that. I might get there. I'm like, oh wait, I didn't think ahead. There's music here at this cafe. I can't do it here. I'm gonna be on video. Okay. You know? And so it's a big piece for me that I'm continually working on is not overestimating what I'm capable of doing and pulling off. And so grateful for the grace that you're able to offer me in getting this connected so that we could be here and sharing this conversation in this space.
It's an absolute pleasure that you were able to make it. And I feel you, man. I used to have a very similar thing where for me, it was trying to please people. So I was like, yeah, I can do that. And then I wouldn't be able to make it. I'd be late and I'd overcommit. And it was massively out of integrity. In the end, rather than pleasing people, it had the opposite effect. And catching yourself in those moments and then continually realigning, being like, okay, can I make that? Is it going to take 10 minutes or is it actually going to take more like 30 minutes? And then just being true to yourself. And I feel you, brother. The grace was absolutely welcome.
Yeah, man. But I'm very aware of it at this point. Mm. And so every time it happens and I'm like, okay, tune up, you know, greater, like less kind of tone down the expectation, you know, and kind of show up even better. And so learning to like not overpromise or overcommit. And just to kind of be like, give myself more leeway, even if it's going to create a little bit of disappointment initially, even if it's going to be like, okay, fine, yes. But just being clear so that I show up on time and I'm able to, you know, really honor my word. So really coming to honor my word and follow through and not overcommit. So it's recalibrating to the pace that I'm moving at now as a father of two and holding all the different pieces that I hold in my life and not... And letting go of this kind of this unrealistic expectation that I still carry from when I was before I had kids, before I was in a relationship. I'm just operating in a different wavelength and a different frequency now. And so I need to really let go of this overachieving, overdoing, overcommitting part of myself.
What are you most afraid of?
Well, it's come up a few times, but I'd say things have shifted since becoming a father. And so there is a real fear at times, even though I trust God, the universe creator deeply, I trust in life. I'm okay with death. I faced a lot of death. And at the same time with my sons, there's a fear. There's a human attachment and fear of them being hurt, of my son Cairo, me not being able to protect him in some capacity. Of just me not being able to be that protective, safe force for them. Whether it's because I'm not there in the physical at a moment where he gets hurt, or I am and I'm just not able to. So that's definitely come up where like, you know, there's a, oh, like, okay, he's okay. And I don't know what that comes from. I don't know if it's just a you know, just part of being a father or if it's a remnant of just ancestral trauma or whether that's just like ancient instinct alive of just like fear being like this healthy, you know, force that keeps us alive, you know, to some degree. Or just a combination of all of it, but it's definitely a real thing where I'm like, there's a part of me that's just always aware of where he's at and what he's doing. And you know, there's been times where it's gone, you know, too deep, where I'm like, oh, like, you know, I hope he's okay. You know, he's out, you know, wherever he's doing. And I know he's in good, with good people, but like, it'll come up like, oh, what if this happens? Some kind of crazy, just crazy thought will come up, you know? So I try not to feed those anymore, but it's just an interesting thing to observe this fear of loss, this fear of harm happening to Cairo. Mm. More to Cairo, because he's been around a little bit longer and I've been able to feel that more. And nature's mostly with his mother always. But I did experience a bit of I had a dream about a stillbirth, about nature being a stillborn. And so Devon and I had to kind of meet that fear and that possibility and really come to acceptance of like, hey, we're doing this natural home free birth, you know, without any assistance from the system. And so it is kind of a reclamation of the ancient ways of doing things. And we've never done it before. And part of birth means is really honoring the possibility of death as well. And so really coming to terms with that was a big thing of just like, death is a part of life. It's just a part of life. And so even losing the potential of losing Cairo or nature or any loved one is just a real and present reality that we live in. You know, no, nothing is guaranteed. Even though we kind of have that tendency as humans to be like, yeah, everything's going to be okay. I'm going to be here forever. Things can change in the blink of an eye. And I've experienced that. So yeah, just really honoring what's healthy to feel recognizing when it's going a little too far into like ideation that drives anxiety or fear. And really having to come back to center and come back to just, this is what's happening in the present moment. I trust.
I read something the other day. It said, imagine if the only thing we got to have tomorrow were the things we were grateful for today. And it's just like, wow. Because you're right, like in the blink of an eye,
yeah,
anything and everything could just be gone.
Yeah.
But it takes a deep trust.
Yeah.
What is it you are creating?
I'm creating safety. I'm creating family, community, greater consciousness and reverence for the sacred. I'm creating a pathway back to our hearts. I'm creating awareness or creating space for people to reclaim awareness of their divinity and self-acceptance. Yeah. I think it's as simple as that. And it always comes back to the heart for me. You know, being raised in an atheistic household for the first 23 years of my life and then believing that there was no God. And then having my awakening, you know, from prayer on the brink of suicide. That was a huge, huge reclamation of the divinity that I'm a part of this divine force that's guiding all of life. That this really is a fantastic, amazing, incredible, miraculous journey that so many people are disconnected from and forgot. So I'm here creating spaces and community and brotherhood where men and all people can tap back in, can feel it, you know, can really come back and feel it, because I think that's so important. You know, people are tired of being told this and that, you know, of empty dogma and of leaders who aren't walking their talk. And so I think just really leading with vulnerability and authenticity and transparency is the way I've approached truly really creating safety and self-acceptance, being a mirror for people to reclaim that for themselves.
That's a really beautiful thing that you were speaking about. You raised atheist and then it wasn't until you yourself found God, found source, had a similar thing. I was raised as a Catholic, but then the priest of the church was put in prison for pedophilia, and a couple of the teachers from the school were arrested on similar things. And I just had this complete denial of what I was being taught because none of it made sense. And it wasn't until, you know, I went on this journey and I was deep in silence for a number of weeks, and in that moment or in that period of time, realized that what I'd been seeking all along was inside of me. Yeah. And the God and the source and the universe that I was told was certain things and was outside of me and was judging me, I was like, no, that's all bullshit.
Yeah.
It's all inside of us. And that's once you tap into that power, it's an infinite source of joy and of love and of wisdom. And all the answers you ever need come from within.
Yeah.
And it was just like,
yeah.
And as soon as you realize that, like, oh shit. Okay. I'm good.
Yeah, I'm good. And I could feel that. I feel the resonance in as you're speaking that. I feel the embodiment and the experience of that in you. Because there's some things that people, you know, can read in a book and you can say these things and it doesn't ring true because they don't haven't embodied it. So when you're saying that, I could just feel it ringing in me. So thank you for being an ambassador of that truth and creating this space for us to have this conversation so that more and more can come in and go, okay, I want to seek, I want to find it, I want to go deeper into it.
What would you like to be known for?
Love. Love for the remembrance that the spiritual heart, this energetic heart, that our heart isn't just a physical organ. It's a metaphysical organ that bridges heaven and earth, that bridges spirit and matter. And it is literally the gateway to God, the gateway to unlocking our own divinity. And for most people that I've encountered, for myself included, for so much of my life, it is shut down. It is clogged with pain and traumas and holding an unbearable weight. And we need people that we feel safe around, that we can trust, that had the capacity to love us and hold compassionate space for us to be able to purge that darkness from us. And sometimes that might look like, a medicine ceremony space. And sometimes that might look like nature. And sometimes that might look like community. And sometimes that might look like compassionate friends and family and other witnesses who can really hold us in our highest, even as we're going through the muck and mire of our shadows, our traumas. But yeah, I'd like to be known for expanding the awareness of how crucial the spiritual heart is and the remembrance and reclamation that this is the birthplace of love. Our heart, our spiritual heart, is literally the birthplace of love. And so many seek love out there, and they don't realize that until they unlock and open their hearts and really heal and feel and really get to the nitty-gritty of what's clogging this vital spiritual organ, they will continue searching endlessly. And I think it was Rumi said, we are not here to, I can't remember in the moment, but basically we are here to remove all the blocks to love. Like that's the work, is like, it's removing our blocks to love. You remember what
I know exactly the one you're talking about. I can't remember it off the top of my head.
Yeah. But it speaks to that. It speaks to that truth that like, that's our work, you know? And I think there was another one that said, I'm not here to teach you, love will teach you, you know? So to become that open door for love to flow through us and for us to really remember like, oh, wow, love is our birthright. And we don't get to love without the heart, without the spiritual heart, without the energetic heart, because we're not just these bodies, right? We're energy beings inside these bodies, inhabiting these bodies for a short time. And so let's use this technology that we've been gifted with, you know, that can help us connect to the divine, that gives us access to all the realms. So yeah, the spiritual heart.
Last question, brother. What would you love for men to know with every fiber of their being?
That you are loved, that God is real, that God is the source of our life. God is greater than any idea or conception we could even imagine. That God is all loving, all powerful, and that God is here and has always been here, even when we have felt like God was not here, that we are alone in our pain. God is here. God has always been here, and God will be here once you clear out your heart, start doing your work to feel and to heal and take responsibility for your life. God will meet you every step of the way, that there's a way back. There's a way back to your highest expression. And all it takes is your courage and your willingness to continue leaning in, to continue stepping in, to continue taking greater responsibility for your life. God will meet you, because God is unconditional love, divine love that is within everything and expressed through all of nature and all of creation. And this love is waiting for us to open back up to it. God doesn't go where it's not invited. So it's important that we learn to pray again, not pray empty words of save me or give me this, but prayers of help me become better. Help me heal. Help me become a force for good. Help me know you, God. Help me remember.
Arapala, and just before we go, where can people find your work? What have you got on offer?
SacredSons.com or Sacred Sons on Instagram. Come experience our work on the Brothership. We have an online membership community. We call it the Brothership, where there's online councils and classes and courses on a daily basis to keep men in connection, to know that there's a safe space for them to go and learn new things, to train, to feel, to heal. There's a father council for new fathers and fathers, you know, fathers to be and fathers that are, you know, it's important for fathers to have a space where we can connect with one another. You know, so there's a space for all men at all different points of your journey to sharpen your physical aspect, to deepen into your emotional fluency, to go deeper into your spiritual practice. There's something for every man, and invite you in at a low monthly fee. So it really is all inclusive. And we're the kind of brotherhood that if you can't afford it, and if you're really struggling financially right now, just reach out and let us know. Let us know that you're really struggling and that you don't have the finances to cover it. At the same time, also lean in, because a low monthly fee for the amazing offering that it is like, you know, if you can't afford this, then you got work to do. You got some serious work to do. So yeah, come in, do the work, level up and make more money, draw in more resources and abundance that is your birthright as well, so that you can afford, more life. Yeah, man.
Brother, that was very, very special. Thank you so much for making the time and for jumping on. It's been a real honor.
Thank you so much, Nick. Thank you for your work. Thank you for your embodiment, your expression. I look forward to being able to share space with you in person when that comes. And I feel like it's going to happen at some point. So it's been an honor. Been an honor. Thank you for doing this work and sharing it in this way. I appreciate your presence.